The National Broadcasting Company presents Lives of Great Men, a new series on great leaders in human progress, presented by Dr. Edward Howard Griggs, distinguished lecturer, critic, and author of The New Humanism and many other books. In his talks, Dr. Griggs is building a story of civilization based on outstanding characters through the ages and how each one influences his own and future times. This evening, Dr. Griggs will discuss Walt Whitman, poet of democracy. We present Edward Howard Griggs.
My friends, Walt Whitman was the poet, not primarily of political democracy, with its imperfect and changing institutions, but of democracy of mind and spirit, at once personal and social, achieved in independence of personality, with the widest harmony in relation to one's fellows. He lived to create, enlarge, and perfect one great poem, which he sought to make the expression of a complete human being in relation to the universe. Born on Long Island in 1819 of sturdy Dutch-English-Welsh ancestry, in him the solid Dutch strain of his mother seems to have been dominant. As far back as his forebears have been traced, they were outdoor laborers, farmers, seamen, carpenters, with only one clergyman and a school teacher to represent the learned professions. Though the family moved to Brooklyn when Walt was a child of four, his boyhood rambles over the hills of Long Island and along the picturesque shores of sea and sound, developed early that passionate love of the outdoor world that marked his entire life. He attended the common school in Brooklyn till 13. Then his school days ended, and his education, through widely varied activities, began. He worked for a lawyer and a doctor, set type for a printer, taught a country school, and began writing newspaper articles, chiefly portraying emotional incidents. At 20, he established the Long Islander, but the following year removed to Manhattan to work in printing offices for 4 years, spending his summers at farm labor in the country. Some amateurish essays and stories were published in this period, with a crude temperance novel written for the New World. Already, however, he was enjoying that comradeship with all sorts of workers and idlers, which enabled him to store up material for his great work. He associated with every possible type of human being, good and bad, in innumerable occupations, studying them inside and outside, but always as understanding comrade. He became able to interpret democracy because he had lived it so wholeheartedly. While for Whitman books were always subordinated to human beings and the realities of nature, he read irregularly but deeply in great literature, history, and science. Despising specialized erudition, he became widely informed in humanistic culture. He loved the theater and still more Italian opera, and rarely missed any important performance. His living was earned during this period as casual journalist, and at 28 he had gained sufficient recognition to be made editor of the Brooklyn Eagle. Then at 30 he was asked to go to New Orleans and organize the Crescent newspaper. With his brother Jeff, Walt sailed by steamer for New Orleans, and both worked 3 months on the paper. This was Whitman's first great adventure away from New York into a widely contrasting human and nature environment. It made a new epoch in his development. He studied with the same eagerness the picturesque New Orleans life with its aristocracy and slavery, its Spanish and French background, discovering the cosmopolitanism of America. It was there, moreover, that he seemed first to have experienced those intimate personal relations that found expression in his most bitterly criticized poems. The brothers returned by the Mississippi to Chicago, then by the Great Lakes to Buffalo and home. It is probable that this first contact convinced Whitman that the heart of America, which to him is synonymous with democracy, is in the West. In any case, that fact he permanently recognized. At 31, he established the Freeman in Brooklyn, and a little later worked successfully at the business of building and selling houses. In this field, he could probably have accumulated a fortune, but he gave it up as his life dream matured. At 36, he published the first edition of Leaves of Grass, largely setting the type himself in a small Brooklyn printing office. It was a small volume compared to what it finally became, but even so representing a decade of work and expressing the consecrated purpose of his life. It contained only 12 poems, but these included what became Song of Myself, a Song of Occupations, and I Sing the Body Electric, thus with the germ of all that was to follow. The little book was almost stillborn. There was some mockery and condemnation, but one notable tribute of recognition came in the letter from Emerson, who wrote, "I am not blind to the worth of the wonderful gift of Leaves of Grass. I find it the most extraordinary piece of wit and wisdom that America has yet contributed. I am very happy in reading it, as great power makes us happy. I give you joy of your free and brave thought. I find incomparable things said incomparably well, as they must be. I greet you at the beginning of a great career, which yet must have had a long foreground somewhere for such a start. I rub my eyes a little to see if this sunbeam were no illusion, but the solid sense of the book is a sober certainty." That letter does Emerson as much credit as Whitman. That with his colder intellectual temperament and love of precise form, he could thus fully appreciate the superb health and vitality of Whitman's sweeping emotional outpourings shows how generous his mind was, and does more to justify him as primate of American letters than anything else he wrote. The tribute greatly encouraged Whitman's faith in his plan and brought wider recognition, though chiefly in attack. Meantime, Whitman went steadily forward. In a year, a second edition appeared containing now 32 poems. Then a Boston publisher issued a handsome, much enlarged edition of 157 poems. But the coming of the Civil War ruined the publisher, resulting in pirated editions which hampered Whitman's plans across many years. The war, however, was to become the center of Whitman's life activity and of his inspiration as poet. In October 1862, he read in the New York Herald that his brother George, who had enlisted, had been wounded and started instantly for the front. Spending the winter with the Army of the Potomac, he discovered that he had a unique gift for serving the wounded soldiers. With his Quaker background, the nursing service appealed to him, and he gave himself to it tirelessly and unstintedly till after the war's close. He served as a volunteer nurse without pay, supporting himself by sporadic newspaper articles. While doing faithfully all the revolting tasks of physical nursing, he was even more the spiritual and mental physician of the mutilated and dying boys. He gave himself to them as comrade, held their hands through ghastly operations, instilled courage to fight for life, wrote their letters to mothers, wives, and sweethearts, descended with them into the Valley of Shadows, and sent home their dying messages. All were his brothers, northerner, southerner, white, or colored. His rare genius in this service was quickly discovered, and cases of which physicians despaired were turned over to him. In many he made burn again the flickering flame of life. Generous persons sent him sums of money, with which he bought gifts to please a sorrowing fancy or ease a suffering body. It is estimated that he served over 100,000 cases. While this terrible loving service broke Whitman's rugged health and gave him 20 years of invalidism, in place of the vigorous life his buoyant spirit demanded, it completed his life preparation. He had both lived democracy and seen it on trial, and both he and America had splendidly borne the test. No matter what grave faults our people showed, there could be no wavering henceforth in his faith in democracy and its ultimate triumph, here and for the world. The frightful years, moreover, gave the heart to Leaves of Grass, in the Drum Taps and Memories of President Lincoln. The poems tenderly portraying the courageously suffering and dying boys and the heartbreaks at home are a more pungent indictment of war and appeal for peace than all arguments. Whitman saw in Lincoln the individual soul matching the collective democracy, loved him, and mourned for him. When lilacs last in the dooryard bloomed is a glorious threnody. But Whitman showed he could use effectively more conventional verse in the elegy on Lincoln. O Captain, my Captain, our fearful trip is done. The ship has weathered every rack. The prize we sought is won. The port is near, the bells I hear, the people all exulting, while follow eyes the steady keel, the vessel grim and daring. But O heart, 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 O the bleeding drops of red, where on the deck my Captain lies, fallen cold and dead. After the war, Whitman was given a place in the Interior Department. His superior, hearing that he had written an indecent book, abstracted Leaves of Grass from Whitman's desk, and because of it discharged him. Walt accepted this, and he did all attacks without resentment. But his friend O'Connor wrote a brilliant rejoinder in The Good Gray Poet. Whitman was quickly given a position in the Attorney General's office, and meantime continued work on his poems. John Burroughs wrote an appreciation of him, and O'Connor portrayed him in the story of the carpenter, a sort of forerunner of the servant in the house. At this time, Whitman formed his close friendship with Peter Doyle, who had been a private in Lee's army and then a Washington streetcar conductor. This friendship inspired many of the comrade poems in Leaves of Grass. Whitman's fame was growing more rapidly in England than here. Simmons, Rossetti, Dowden, Edward Carpenter, and Gilchrist enthusiastically supported him. Recognition in such high literary quarters greatly comforted him in view of continuing American attacks, with the best magazines consistently rejecting his poems. The broken health resulting from his terrible war service culminated in a stroke of paralysis at 54, the same year in which he suffered his deepest spiritual shock in the death of his beloved mother. He was prostrated for several years and then partially recovered. Camden, New Jersey was his home for the remainder of his crippled life. He devoted the late years to the completion of the great plan of his poem, revising and perfecting verses previously written, rounding out the scheme with new poems, publishing prose works as a worthy intellectual housing for the emotional appeal of the poems. In 1881, Osgood and Company of Boston published an edition of Leaves of Grass, but the district attorney threatened prosecution, and the frightened publishers withdrew it, and Whitman took it over. This absurd threat gave Whitman's work all needed publicity, and the closing decade of his life was of steadily growing recognition and fame. Ingersoll eulogized him, his close friends rallied to him, and his last period was serene. He continued writing new poems, meditations on life and death, reaffirmations of faith, vistas of hope. As the early emphasis had been on the natural, the body interpreting the soul, so the last is on the spiritual, the soul transfiguring the body. Leaves of Grass has two subjects, or rather one subject in two aspects, Whitman, or man, and the universe, each mirroring and interpreting the other. It is at once thus personal and cosmic. Its philosophy is that democracy is the free development of significant independent personalities, each in complete solidarity with the whole. Institutions exist only to further that end. Whitman wrote freely, but never carelessly. His verse is meticulously molded in cadence, rhythm, and diction, polished and refined by careful labor. His faults are easily stated. At times, his comprehensiveness becomes a rather tiring catalog, and he had the curious liking for using occasional foreign terms out of step with his vigorous English diction. As man and the universe are one, so soul and body are one to Whitman, and each as sacred as the other. His glorification of sex is an effort to dignify what has been degraded by secretive hypocrisy, and which he regards as only the human aspect of the universal creative energy. Whitman's poetry is germinal rather than final, prophetic rather than conclusive, as he meant it to be. In reflecting upon Tennyson, he remarks that Tennyson was not a rugged evolutionary aboriginal force, but that exactly describes Whitman himself. In the collect, he says, democracy waits the coming of its bards in silence and twilight, but 'tis the twilight of the dawn. With the sense of the fight partly won, and a forward look into the great mystery, he died March 26, 1892. His closing mood is given in songs of parting. Joy, shipmate, joy. Please to my soul at death I cry. Our life is closed. Our life begins. The long, long anchorage we leave. The ship is clear at last. She leaps. She swiftly courses from the shore. Joy, shipmate, joy.
Walt Whitman, poet of democracy, has been the subject of another program in this series titled Lives of Great Men, presented by Dr. Edward Howard Griggs, distinguished lecturer, critic, and author. Next week, Dr. Griggs will speak on Edwin Markham and American ideals. Copies of tonight's discussion of Walt Whitman may be obtained by addressing the National Broadcasting Company, Radio City, New York, or the station to which you're listening. This program is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company from its studios in the RCA Building, Radio City, New York.